She made it all the way down the steps, holding on to the banister. Sandy's face broke into a smile. "Well, good morning." "Hi," Doris said, still pale and weak, but she smiled back. "I'm real hungry." "I hope you like eggs," Sandy helped her to a chair. "I'll eat the shells," Doris replied, showing her first sign of humor.
"You can start with these, and don't worry about the shells," Sarah Rosen told her, shoveling some onto a plate.
She had turned the corner. The improvement from only 24 hours before was miraculous. Awkwardness and all, she unfolded her napkin and consumed her first real breakfast in months in as dignified a manner as her condition and hunger allowed. Doris was turning back into a person. But they still didn't know anything about her except her name, Doris Brown.
"Where are you from?"
Sandy asked as innocently as she could manage.
"Pittsburgh." "Family?"
"Just my father. Mom died in 65. Breast cancer," Doris said slowly.
"Nobody else?"
the nurse asked evenly.
"My brother. Vietnam."
"I'm sorry, Doris."
"It's okay.
Sandy's my name."
"I'm Sarah," Dr. Rosen added, refilling her plate.
"Thank you, Sarah." Doctor and nurse shared a look of triumph. They had done it.
"Tell us about your father," Sarah coaxed.
"I ran away," Doris replied at once, "right after David, after the telegram. And Daddy, he had some trouble, and he blamed me."
Raymond Brown was tossing and turning in his bed when the phone rang.
"Hello.
Hello, is this Raymond Brown?"
"Yeah, who's this?"
"My name is Sarah Rosen. I'm a doctor in Baltimore."
"Yes?"
There was sudden fear. Why would a doctor from Baltimore be calling him?
"I have somebody here who wants to talk to you, Mr. Brown."
"Huh?"
From hundreds of miles away, he heard,
"Daddy?"
His answer came out as a sob.
"Dor?" "Yes, Daddy. I'm sorry. Are you okay, baby?" "Yes, Daddy, I'm fine."
And as incongruous as the statement was, it was not a lie. Soon, four people were weeping. Nurse and physician were the luckiest, sharing a hug and savoring their victory over the cruelties of the world.
Bob Ritter parked his car and walked into the executive office building. He found it on the second floor, the room of Roger McKenzie, Special Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs.
"Hi, Bob. How are things at Langley?" McKenzie asked.
"The usual," Ritter smiled, nodded towards the office.
"Wally, we need someone to take notes," McKenzie said.
"Coming, sir."
His executive assistant rose from his desk and brought a pad.
"Bob Ritter, this is Wally Hicks. I don't think you've met."
"How do you do, sir?"
A minute later, they were sitting in McKenzie's office.
"So, what brings you in, Bob?" McKenzie asked.
Hicks began writing quickly.
"Roger, a rather unique opportunity has presented itself over in Vietnam."
Eyes opened wider and ears perked up.
"What might that be?"
"We've identified a special prison camp southwest of Haiphong," Ritter began, quickly outlining what they knew and what they suspected.
McKenzie listened intently.
"Let me see what you've got," he said after a few minutes.
He scrutinized the photographs Ritter put before him.
"Who is he?" McKenzie asked.
"Colonel Robin Zacharias, Air Force."
"He knows everything, Roger."
McKenzie looked up and whistled.
"And this guy's no Vietnamese," he said, pointing to Grishinov.
"He's colonel in the Soviet Air Force, name unknown. But it isn't hard to figure out what he's there for. Here's the real punchline."
Ritter handed over a copy of the wire service report on Zacharias's death.
"Damn."
"Yeah. All of a sudden it gets real clear, doesn't it?"
"This sort of thing could wreck the peace talks," McKenzie thought aloud.
Walter Hicks paled. "Wreck the peace talks," he scribbled down, his fingers white around the pencil.
Roger. The men we believe to be in this camp know an awful lot. Enough to seriously compromise our national security.
I mean, seriously, Ritter said calmly. You have my attention, Bob.
Mr. Hicks, Ritter said, could you please excuse us?
The junior assistant looked to his boss. Wally, I think we'll carry on in executive session, Mackenzie said.
Yes, sir.
Hicks stood and walked out the door, closing it quietly.
Fuck! He raged to himself, sitting back down at the desk. How could he advise his boss if he didn't hear what came next?
Robert Ritter, he thought angrily, just like those dumbass soldiers. They took their chances, didn't they? This could wreck the peace talks. Even Mackenzie thought that. All those kids from his generation dead. And now they might risk not ending the war because of 15 or 20 professional killers who probably liked what they did. It just made no sense. Hicks saw the door open. Mackenzie and Ritter came out.
Wally, we're going across the street for a few minutes.
Yes, sir.
Wasn't that typical, Hicks thought. Ritter had Mackenzie sold enough that Roger would make the pitch to the National Security Advisor. And they would probably raise pure fucking hell at the peace table, and maybe set things back 3 months or more, unless somebody saw through the ruse. Hicks lifted his phone and dialed a number.
Senator Donaldson's office. Hi, I was trying to get Peter Henderson. I'm sorry, he and the senator are in Europe right now. They'll get back next week.
Oh, that's right. Thanks.
Hicks hung up. Damn, he'd forgotten. Peter's senator was in Europe on a fact-finding tour, which allowed much time off. At the moment, Peter was touring the Tower of London.
Warm day for London, another tourist said.
I wonder if they get thunderstorms here, the American replied casually.
They do, the man replied, but not as severe as those in Washington.
Henderson headed for the exit. A moment later, he was strolling around Tower Green with his new companion.
Your English is excellent.
Thank you, Peter. I am George.
Hi, George.
Henderson smiled. He really was like James Bond.
George was a full colonel in the KGB. This is the only time we will meet, Peter.
Henderson nodded.
Your senator has access to many things.
Yes, he does.
You have adverse political elements in your government.
So do we.
We need your help in controlling them.
How can I do that?
Let us know from time to time certain special things you have learned about us. The time for war is behind us. It is time to put an end to it, an end that both sides will find acceptable.
That's good to hear, George.
So, can you help us?
I've been helping you, George,
which was true. Henderson, who had been codenamed Cassius by the KGB, had been nibbling at the hook for nearly 2 years.
Yes, Peter, I know that. But now we are asking for a little more. The decision is yours, my friend. There is danger involved.
You know that, George warned.
I'll take my chances. It's worth it.
Ah.
You will be contacted when you get home, George paused. Peter, I thank you. I must go now.
See you, George, Henderson said. It caused George to turn and smile one last time.
No, Peter, you will not.
George walked towards Traitor's Gate, smiling at what he'd just accomplished and at the thundering irony of the stone arch before his eyes.
Thanks, Roger, Bob Ritter said in the sanctity of his office in Langley. He switched buttons on his phone and dialed another in-house number.
James?
Bob.
It's a go.
Start pushing buttons.
Thank you, James.
Dutch Maxwell turned in his swivel chair and hung up the phone.
Yeoman Grafton, he called.
Yes, sir.
A petty officer appeared in the doorway.
Make signal to Admiral Podolsky on Constellation. Olive green.
Aye, aye, sir.
Maxwell smiled, deeply satisfied.